Huey with KK4JBQ. If I can find a way to control the motor with something that doesn't have a MOSFET or an IC chip in it. So, I've got a linear power supply, and that's why I learned today. I didn't physically pull the cover off of it. I just kind of looked through the vent holes on the back of it. I didn't see a whole lot of IC chips in there. I saw old school capacitors and potentiometers and things like that are not affected by, you know, RF balls. So I pulled the old trusty power supply off the shelf that I do electroplating with, and hooked it up to a windshield wiper motor, made a new shaft, and bada bing, bada bing, there you go.
See that? The name of a circuit came to my mind. It's one used over coax to run RF and DC at the same time. Useful if you want to send RF up to the antenna, but also control signals to the rotor. It's called a VersaT, capital letter T, VersaT. Probably got a hyphen in there. Anyway, I can't explain it. I don't know it that well, but it's commonly used. How it keeps, you know, those rotators will require a good bit, not 200 amps, of course, but a good bit of current. That's all I've got. But when you mentioned using the coax in that way, that brought that to my mind. And I've got a friend who works as a welder at BMW. I really don't have enough information to answer his intelligent questions. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, he's a ham. He's local, works for BMW. He's a welder. And there might be something there, a resource. KK4JBQ.
That part's figured out. It's functioning the way it needs to. So I'm not concerned about it. We had to make a trip down to Welder Supply House today, and we changed the tungsten out. So in the end of the stinger, you have a piece of thoriated tungsten that you grind to an extremely sharp tip. And that plasma comes out the end of that tip, but because stainless requires a higher temperature, it erodes the end of the tip, you know, after 30, 45 minutes, and you have to go back over and regrind it. So we went down Welder Supply and got some 3% thoriated tungsten and replaced the tip in the stinger today, and that seems just totally different feel. It even sounds different when the plasma stream comes out. So a lot better looking weld too. It's a lot more durable. So We're figuring things out. When you trying to put something together just to make it work, that's one thing. But man, I'm gonna tell you, you're dealing with stuff like this, it's a whole new ball game for me. I've never really dealt with a whole lot of food grade stuff other than just sheet metal. You know, you just grind your boogers away. As long as there's no inclusions for bacteria, and you polish it up, and you're good to go. But man, this stuff you got to come from the inside out. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of, you can't get in a hurry with it, and that's a killer, because you have to take your time. It dictates spending time with it. So we got that much figured out. Now we'll move on to passivation next. I don't exactly know how we're going to do all that and how that's going to work, but I've never done any passivation before, but we're going to have to figure it out. So let me let my radio drop, Larry. The sub-passivation machine to get through this first job, and then we'll have to get our own passivator after this. But he should be able to make enough off of this job to get him a good passivator. So one step at a time. And the guy told him last week that, if the parts make it through QC, then we're going to give all of these nozzles to you and just let you take care of them. So we're trying to go the extra step and make sure they look good, but I got to be honest with you, I'm worried about this passivation a little bit, but we'll figure it out. Just one step at a time.
Go ahead and admit my ignorance as to what passivation is. I suppose it's the root being passive has something to do with it, but I'd just be guessing. It helped me just to give me a short primer on what that does for you.
Basically, when you weld stainless, you change the temper. The metal gets hot really quick and cools pretty quick. And when that heating and cooling process takes place, the metal starts to change colors. And the slang term for that is peacock. It starts to peacock. So you get all these rainbow colors in this stainless that's supposed to be silver. It doesn't hurt anything, it just looks bad. And of course, anything that's near food, it has to look good. I'm sure there's a reason for that, other than maybe just looking pretty. I don't know. But you can't put a wire wheel on it, because when you put a wire wheel on food grade, you create these micro scratches where bacteria can grow. So no wire wheels to remove the peacock. So you have to use a passivator, which is this is going to sound bad, but it is what it is. You have a pipe with a brush on it hooked to a pump. And the end of the brush has stainless steel bristles on it. And there is 75 amps of current that passes through this plastic brush with stainless steel tips. And muriatic acid squirts out in between the bristles. so that you are electrically removing the peacock. You're basically etching the material to remove the peacock. But it's high current and, you know, current and fluid. It is. But, you know, it is what it is. So I've never run a passivator before. I don't know kind of what to expect. But, you know, we'll figure it out.
Well, you've given me a good picture of this means of controlling what I suppose is an inevitable outcome, the peacocking being something you just have to deal with, in this case, anyway. Yeah. I know that in another application, some inert gases are used to aid in welding and cut down oxidation and the quality of the weld, to weld it within. I know that I'm going places, but this is just all I know. I'm doing a mind dump here. The work is done within a gaseous environment that holds the initial development of that which you don't want to a minimum. You probably get what I'm trying to say, don't you?
So let me explain how this works. So you take an ink pen, it's about 8 inches long, and on take a piece of garden hose about 8 inches long. Slide that ink pen up in that garden hose. Now imagine you have a plasma stream, a stream of electricity that's coming out of the ink pen. But in between the outside of the ink pen and the inside of the garden hose, you have a noble gas that's flowing through it. And that's called a shielding gas. So that shielding gas flows over the plasma stream while that puddle is in a molten state, and it will not allow oxygen to get to the puddle because oxygen is very corrosive to metal when it's molten, and you have to keep the oxygen away from it. So we flood it with a noble gas, which in this particular case we're using argon, and argon floods that molten puddle while he's welding, and he keeps the oxygen away. But during that process, that's where the peacocking takes place, and I'm not sure if that's from just the high temperatures or if the argon causes that. I'm not sure, but it's it is what it is, you know. And you've had to find other ways to deal with it. But well, let me tell you this: we started welding day before yesterday, and like I said, I'm not a certified welder, but I had a 2,000-pound bottle of argon down there that's about half used up. I had about 1,000 pounds of it. And you have a regulator on it, and you regulate how much shielding gas comes out in one clip. And typically, me and Dad run about 10, 15 pounds. Well, Perry came down there yesterday, and he jacked it up to about 35 pounds. And I said, son, I said, that's a lot of gas. Well, I got to have it. I said, okay. So Dad came down there and he looked at it. He said, Perry, that's too much gas. Perry says, I'm doing this. So me and Dad, we didn't say a word. We just didn't say anything. Well, he ran out of gas this morning. We had to make a trip down to Welder Supply.
One with us, right? Got a good idea where this is going.
We went down. You got to take a bottle to get a bottle. You give them the empty, and they give you a new one. But you have to pay. You have to pay the man, right? So, we backed the truck up. I said, okay, back the truck up to the loading dock. And I says, when you get to the loading dock, you know, you pick up your new bottle. And then you drive around here, and you have to go in there and pay. You have to pay the man. So, hang on. We pulled around to the thing to go in there and pay the. And the guy says, you got 2,000 pounds of argon. Here's the slip. Go over there and see Miss whatever her name was. And she just looked at him right off the bat. She said, that'd be $87. He said, how much? And she said, $87. So we paid the lady. We got in the truck. We didn't get 5 minutes down the road. Boy, he's quiet. He didn't say a word. We got about 5 minutes down the road, and he said, Daddy, he said, was that right? $87? I said, yeah. I said, that's cheap. And he says, what's that regulator set on again? And I said, well, right now you got it set on 35 pounds. Oh, he said, we got to turn that down. That's too much gas. And he said, and you know what? I had to unload the truck. I had to unload the bottle, and I had to put the bottle in the truck. He didn't even put the bottle in the truck. And those things weigh about 150, 175 pounds. And I didn't say anything. I just laughed to myself, you know. I came back and told Daddy. And Daddy says, well, I didn't say anything to him yesterday, but I knew when you went down to Welder Supply that'd get the flow rate down. So it's sitting at about 12 pounds right now.
Well, those are the best lessons, the ones you never forget. Those that cost you one way or another. And you're right, he didn't pay the full cost of unloading and loading the new tank. There's a cost there, too. But as long as he got that well etched in his brain, I know you and I both have had things etched in our brain. And it's not just materials, it's been other things as well. But you don't forget those things. They come to you instantly, even if it's just a little bit related. Those things pop into your mind. Humans are like that. It's a good thing, because that's why we survive. We learn not to make the same mistake over and over and over again.
04 NUE with KK4, next lesson that's coming. And I swear I hate to say this, but I don't know any other way to do it, because I did the same thing. So when you put the bottle on the tank, you have a regulator that you screw into it, and it basically steps it down from 2,000 pounds, and it regulates how much comes out of the diffuser when you're welding. So we're stepping it down to about 12 pounds. Well, over time, the valve in the stinger will leak, which is not an issue when it's in use, because you want the shielding gas to come out. However, when you shut the machine down and quit for the day, if you don't shut the bottle off, what happens is that it leaks during the night. And yes, you know, new machines won't leak, but one you get with age on it, all of them do it. So this is the third time that we've told him, at the end of the day, turn the bottle off. Because if you don't, you're going to come down here the next day and you're not going to have any gas. So told him again today, bless his heart, Terry, turn the bottle off. And he said, oh, okay. So he turned it off and he said, I'm going to go eat lunch and then, or go do something. Came back and I went down there and checked on the shop a while ago and the bottle was left on. So I hate to say it, and that's going to sound harsh, but I'm going to leave it open. I don't know what else to do. I mean, Daddy's told him 3 or 4 times. I know I've told him 3 times today over the past couple of days. So, you know, some lessons just have to come the hard way, I guess.
This. I haven't used argon, but a lot of acetylene in different size tanks and different size tips. I was only told once, and maybe it's just the way it comes in. Who says it? How they phrase it, maybe? The urgency that you sense in the voice, I don't know what it is, but I was told once to turn that bottle off at the end of a work day, because I used it throughout the work day. I never forgot, and it was nowhere near the cost. I never saw the ticket for the cost to refill one of those bottles. But I knew it was something that I couldn't come up with scratch, you know. There was a process. There was an expense at the end of the process. Whatever it takes to get acetylene into a tank, or argon for that matter. I just have a gut respect for such a thing. So turn the bottle off, game natural. But everybody's different, so maybe, like you say, he has to learn that hard way. But that, too, will never leave him. KK4JBQ.
Exactly so. I remember, you know, Dad, you know, my lesson was with oxygen and acetylene. I left them both on over the weekend. And he just had bought new bottles. And he told me 4 or 5 times, and I just slipped my mind. And it came out of my pay. I mean, it just, you know, back then it wasn't, you know, you get both bottles for about $60, maybe 50. And now it's, you know, it's about 150 to get, you know, oxygen, acetylene, both filled. And I guess that's the way it's going to have to be. I mean, that's the way it was with me. I don't have any other reference, but it is what it is. And we'll just see, I guess.
Yeah, that's true, and my setup is oxygen and acetylene as well. And so you have to turn off both bottles. And let's see, was there anything else? I think one of the things that I did struggle with was the mixture of pressure for the work and the job to be done. The work pieces and the job to be done. If I was smelting gold, we took a lot of scrap gold and cast it into other usable items. So you have to know a little bit about the alloys, what alloys work and what don't. Doesn't approach the complexity of what you normally do, but still something you can't dismiss. And the mixture of the two gases will give you a tiny, tiny little pinpoint, so you can solder a chain. I'm talking of, you know, just a little chain that a woman puts around her wrist. So you solder that, and then you've got this, you put on another, like a blowtorch, on the same tanks. You can do it on the same tanks. And you got to change your setup. All these things are, it's just basic. And, you know, some things should be repeated as many times, because at some point, don't you think, or maybe you can tell me, my guess is that at some point it becomes dangerous not to follow the rules. It could be dangerous. Am I right?
Hey, you know, there's a reason for everything when you're dealing with, you know, high voltages and flammable gas and electricity and acid. I mean, it's just, you know, it just sounds really bad. But I think at some point, he may have picked up some bad habits. And Dad and I have learned some hard lessons with that over time. And he's just never experienced an accident where, you know, somebody gets burned or somebody gets hurt. When it's just, the way I'm looking at it, as harsh as it is, you know, $87 is cheap. That's a cheap lesson when you're dealing with stuff like this. You know, when you deal with, you know, flipping burgers at McDonald's, okay, well, you know, that's a $2 hamburger. But this kind of stuff here, you can't mess around with that kind of stuff. In an enclosed environment, no, and I just, I mean, I don't want to sound harsh about it, but I can't tolerate it for a lot of reasons. Not trying to be harsh, but, and Dad, you know, Dad spots it too. I mean, he sees it, but, you know, that's not saying anything negative. That's just you have to learn, and you have to learn through mistakes. And I think that's one thing I'm very gracious for my father, was that Dad, once I learned, now it took a while, Dad got a point, got across to me that, you know, your failures, you know, I'm going to exploit, not to be demeaning, but to make you learn that your failures are going to end up being, make you much stronger. You can read it out of a book 500 times, but when, you know, when you feel that $87 come out of your pocket, when you do that four or five times, then that's when I learned, hey, you know, that old man's telling me to do that for a reason. I don't necessarily need to know the reason right now. When things slow down, I'll ask him. But he said do it this way, and I assume there's a reason that we do it that way. I'll find out later exactly the way he says. And that took me a while to learn. But when I got a little bit older and wiser, I learned to just trust. And you don't have to question, just trust. And unfortunately, that took me probably 10 or 12 years to learn. And I got a feeling that's just, you know, maybe the way it is. Or it is with us anyway. Maybe other people can do it faster, but I don't know. What do you think?
Through my mind, the point that we're touching on here is how to make somebody appreciate the cost. And my dad once told me, I remember this from a little boy. He didn't tell me many times. He didn't have to. He said, in the beginning, consider the cost. And when I would hear it again, it's because he was showing me something new and something different and using a different tool or different materials. And he'd say, okay, now before we start this, we're going to consider the cost. And that's not the cost of the material so much, but the cost of making a mistake, wasting the material, the cost of making a mistake and harming yourself. The biggest organ in the human body is your skin. And I know you've mentioned tonight that there's an acid in use. Well, the correct use of acid is, it's unforgivable. There is no margin for making a little mistake sometimes. And then it's, you live with the damage the rest of your life if it harms your body. It's a great way to make a point. especially to a young person who's got their life ahead of them. I'm not saying that being older, you and I would take any greater risk, but you weigh the cost of doing it the wrong way. Maybe it fails and you waste the material, or not taking the greatest care when using dangerous material or material that could act in a way that you cannot anticipate if you go outside of the boundaries of normal use. Anyway, that's the thing that was coursing through my brain when you were saying all that, is that it's just a standard thing, whether you're, oh, I remember the first time I was trying to, maybe you remember, I don't know, but you remember timing lights, the thing that had a, had like a flash tube, and that looked like a pistol, and it had a flash tube at the end, and you would connect it to the engine, and every time that a spark was sent from the distributor, this, it goes back to distributor automobiles, then that tube would flash. You put that on the pulley that was connected to the crankshaft. Had markings on it, and you, okay, let me stop right there and say, have you ever timed an engine in that fashion? Oh, you're working around spark plugs and perhaps not the best shaped spark plug wires. I'll never forget the time that I got hit with 12 volts and all the amperage that the car had. It pushed me. It took me bodily and threw me a good 10 feet away from the car. I survived it. I knew I could not survive that again. I just got lucky. I've heard other people got hit with what the coil can put out and live. Well, I'm an example of one that made that terrible mistake. And I started working differently. There was a cost. I was very aware of it at that point. Sometimes that's... And Dad watched me do it. I don't know if he knew what was coming. you know what may be coming, and it's kind of up to you whether to give him a good talking to and maybe a phrase he can hang on to, like consider the cost. Dollars and cents, that's one thing, but your health, your life, those are other things. All this is fascinating to me. KK4JBQ.
Kiwi. So yeah, Dad came down and well, he's been off and on down there the last couple of days. He dropped in to, you know, he's fuss at me for not fussing at him, that kind of thing. So I think today's so we bought a pack of 3/16, a tube of 3/16 stainless TIG rods. These things are 3 feet long and they're 1/16 of an inch in diameter. And when you're TIGing, it's kind of precise. And it takes a little bit of skill to hold a 3 foot rod and inject it into that puddle stream and keep the weld looking nice. So Perry takes them and cuts them in half, which that's common. But Dad, me didn't fuss at him. He just said, look, you know, this $46 for those rods. And what ends up happening is, as you feed the rod into the part that you're welding, it gets small, it gets shorter and shorter. So you end up with about a 6-inch stub that, for most, I guess most welders, it just becomes unusable because you have to get your fingers so close to the plasma stream, as the shorter it gets, it burns, starts to burn your fingers. So that he had 8 or 10 pieces of, you know, 6 inches of filler rod laying there. And Dad said, what are you going to do with those? And he says, well, that's scrap. And, oh, Lord, he shouldn't have said that, you know. Dad's all over that, and I knew what he was going to say. And he's right. And so Dad, you know, taught him some, showed him, you know, what to do to, you know, because you get four of those, that's a stick of, well, filler. So he showed him how to work around that, and you know, if you're going to cut them in half, that's fine. But, you know, you got to use all the material. And he showed him how to do that and set his welding shield up to handle a 3-foot stalk. And, you know, I just didn't think to tell him. I just thought, well, you know, whatever we need to do to get through the day, I'll let that be another lesson. But Dad didn't wait. He just said, you know, hey, here's the deal. And it's all about a dollar, you know. So he let him know, showed him what to do. We'll see what he does. See if he corrects.
Franklin was right, absolutely right. No matter the amount, when he said a penny saved is a penny earned. A dollar saved is a dollar earned, and right on up, you know. It's conservation. I don't know. It's to me, conservation is a matter of respect. It didn't come out of you. It's not something you make. You went to somebody else who provided it at a cost, of course. I guess you could equate everything with the dollars and cents. It's one way to do it. But also the respect for material. That might, I don't know, is that too far-fetched for most people to get? I got a gut feeling that you will know what I mean when I say respect the material. KK4JBQ.
Days, absolutely. You know, I remember Dad, you know, over the years, he's, you know, order bulk stock. And we've got a book down in the shop called The Machinery Owner's Handbook. It's, other than the Bible, that's the most important book in the world out here. It's about 3 inches thick. And it's got any piece of information you want to know about a piece of metal. Anything from welding to machining to threads to making your own sealant, making your own coolant. I mean, it's a wonderful book. And I remember Dad, you know, I started off on the bandsaw cutting material, and I was afraid to get too close to the line, and Dad corrected that right off the bat. You know, you give me an eighth of an inch over the line, no more, no less. And you know, I'm staying an inch or two off of the line. Well, when you get at the end of a 20-foot stalk, those couple of inches add up to a whole lot of waste. And you just, you know, you have to. You're right. You have to respect it from the dollar point of view. But nowadays, just getting the material, that's even more of a reason to safeguard. You know, measure twice and cut once, that kind of thing. But you know, let me let my radio drop, Larry. About 3 or 4 years ago, the plant up in Tennessee or Kentucky, I forget which state it was in, they manufactured acetylene gas for torches. Well, it caught on fire and blew up. I mean, just destroyed the plant. And we went through, I don't know, 3 or 4 months where you couldn't even get acetylene. And boy, that's bad news in a shop, especially some kind of fab shop or something. You know, you have to get that hacksaw out because you don't have acetylene. You doggone right, you turn that bottle off. But those lessons will come in time. I mean, that's just the way it is. You don't think anything about it until, you know, your pocketbook's involved. It's kind of like you ever heard saying, drive it like you stole it. Well, when it's somebody else's vehicle, drive it the way you want. But when it's your vehicle and you're paying for it, things change a little bit, right?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just funny like this. If it's driving, I was once told that if you're in a vehicle and there's anything that can go wrong, you are the most precious thing in that vehicle. You can't be replaced. No matter what. You know, no matter what. So, from that, consider everything from that point of view. So, I remember thinking this when I was given the job of driving a dump truck. I'd never driven a dump truck before. I learned quick. In the matter of 10 minutes, I had the gear pattern memorized. I had got the feel of the steering, had my mirrors, and that was it. I mean, I ran that dump truck for 2 years, and I always treated that thing like it was the sweetest ride ever. because I knew it would take care of me, take care of my job. That's the way I'm made, you know, that's the way I'm made. Let me ask you a question. Do you have any common use for small oxygen and acetylene things, you know, like small bottles, very fine tips? Do you ever use anything like that?
Well, actually, I have been trying to find oxygen acetylene torch set that's everything we got is so big, it's made to cut, you know, eighth of an inch stuff or bigger. Well, sometimes you need to do, you know, you need to do some really fine work, and if you just can't do that with what we got down there. But I found a couple on eBay, but they're, you know, made offshore, and I don't know. I know it sounds a little strange, but I'm kind of picky about that kind of stuff. Down there, I've learned some hard lessons with that. And you know, if you're gonna, I remembered a lesson Granddaddy taught me, and he told me, I never will forget it. He said, if it fits in your hand, and you have to depend on it to feed your family, if you have to depend on it to feed your family, and it fits in your hand, you always buy the best. There's a time and a place to have cheap things, but there's also a time and a place to not have those things. And, you know, I just learned years ago that I just don't like to have stuff like that down there. It's not that I'm, I don't know how to describe that. You spend more time trying to run around and get another one if you paid a little extra and got a quality one to begin with, you wouldn't have to be dealing with all this. But that's what I'm getting at. But from time to time, yes, and it's frustrating when you've trying to do brain surgery with a machete. It's that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
And the reason I brought it up is that the oxygen acetylene setup that we use as jewelers, we're talked to, uses a product called Tiny Torch. I mean, for everybody I talked to that have been using it 40 years, used a Tiny Torch. And it just perfectly adjustable. And when I left, the last jeweler I worked for sold the business or liquidated the store, and everybody's job was going to disappear. So as partial compensation, I was allowed to take some tools, and that's one tool that I took. I can't speak for where the company is made today, but I know this thing is, this particular setup is fed to several families. I have it in our garage. I'm aware that if I have oxygen and acetylene in a garage, that I should have it posted on the garage door what's in there as far as, you know, explosive gases and under pressure and stuff like that. So that's always kind of been in the back of my mind. And I just wondered if you'd have any use for such as that. You'd have to you know, maybe before you answer, look up this product and see if it's if it would be right for you. Do you understand?
Sure, I understand. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not something that we use every day, but every now and then I get something down here that's just right beyond the range of what, you know, the equipment can handle, you know, too big or too small. And usually I'm pretty good at judging what's too big. If it's just too much, you know, it's just best to just say, I can't handle that. It's just not worth the damage it causes. But I'm not good at all at determining what's too small. I just never got a knack for it. And it's nothing more frustrating in the world than trying to do something really tedious with something that's made to handle, you know, medium duty stuff. It's frustrating. But I have looked and I can't find anything that's decent quality that is, you know, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say. It's just, things just not made like they used to be made. And when you have something that's, you know, older like that, that's definitely quality. I had a friend of mine lives down the road. He gave me a set of torches from when he worked in maintenance. One of his friends gave me the gauges to go with it. Rebuilt the gauges, and you can tell he set the gauges up a little bit different than what you can buy to go along with the torch. And they're older, much older, but boy, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to find anything nowadays that does a finer job. I mean, it's like night and day. It's unbelievable.
KO4NUE with KK4JVQ. Well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to, as I say, look into the tiny torch, and if it's a good description, you'll get some idea of what its capability is. And I frankly believe at this point in my life, I'm probably not going to use it. I will not have the opportunity, and my eyesight is failing. At some point, it would not be wise for me to use it. Not quite there yet, but I have a bench and some tools, hand tools. One thing I wished many times that I had negotiated for was the watchmaker's lathe. It's a very teeny tiny. It's the size of a sewing machine, you know. That's how small a watchmaker's lathe is. But very capable, and you can do wonders with it. But that part of my life is behind me now, and as I said, I'm a bit concerned that I probably shouldn't have those tanks in the garage. We've been here 22 years, and they haven't been touched. That says it all, I suppose.
I know what you're saying. At some point, you know, things like that were made to be used. And when you know, they're not used, that's, I don't know, it sounds weird, but it's just kind of doing a little bit of disservice there. Because, you know, made to do fine work. And, you know, I know it's an inanimate object, but I don't know. I have a tendency to personify things like that. I've got a special drawer down there in my toolbox that men of character over the years have, you know, thought enough of me to give me, you know, special this or special that. And, you know, I do use them, but they're missing opportunity to say, you know, that's so-and-so, so-and-so. Coincidentally, I'll tell you that. I'll give you a holler on landline and talk about that. But at any rate, I know exactly what you mean. But absolutely, I would love to have them. I'd be willing to buy it if that's what you want to do. But there's a definite need. It's not an everyday need, but it's one of those things that when you ain't got it, it hurts. You know what I mean?